Hello and welcome, Transformation Talk Radio listeners and podcast listeners everywhere. My name is Ellen Stewart, and I am the pushy broad from the Bronx.
She's the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York. Follow her voice, a straight dog and I. She's the pushy broad from the Bronx, oh yeah. Don't be surprised if you wanna listen twice. Make decisions, find the right choice. Know yourself better, find your own voice. It's okay if you need help today, cause everybody needs a little push. From the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York.
Welcome, Transformation Talk Radio listeners. My name is Ellen Stewart, and I am the pushy broad from the Bronx. This weekly show airs every Wednesday on Transformation Talk Radio and podcast stations everywhere at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. Welcome to Women Who Push for More. This is where I interview enterprising, self-aware, and confident women who strive to achieve more in every aspect of their lives and have learned to never settle for less than they are worth. Inspiring and empowering stories of true pushy broads whose strength and courage makes us all want to be women who push for more. I am delighted today to welcome a very special guest on my very special new show, Women Who Push for More. I'd like to tell you a little bit about this woman before we start our interview and my conversation with Patty Reyes D'Agostino. Patty, most of all, is a mother of two children, and she is also the daughter of immigrants raised with the American dream of working hard and succeeding. She is a college graduate, and she has done well for herself. She also has been married for 30 years, meeting her sweetheart and future husband in high school. Patty has an amazing story to tell us today, and that is one of hope after struggle. She is truly a woman who pushed for more. Today, we're going to talk about Patty's struggle with domestic violence and how she overcame it and what kinds of organizations she is a part of today. It's my pleasure and honor to introduce Patty Reyes D'Agostino. Good morning, Patty. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you? Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. I was given your name by a friend of mine who, when I was talking to her about my brand new show, Women Who Push for More, the first thing she said to me was, you have to talk to my friend, Patty. And then when you and I spoke on the phone and I said to you, I am Ellen Stewart, the pushy broad from the Bronx, how did you identify yourself?
Can I be the pushy broad from Queens?
There you go. So Bronx girls allow Queens girls to be pushy broads for sure. And I had told you, if you remember, that I always felt that a pushy broad was an acronym for powerful, unafraid, self-aware, hardworking, young at heart women. And I'm glad that you could concur. So you identify yourself as a pushy broad.
Absolutely.
There you go. One of the reasons why I thought it was really important to hear your story today, because you are sitting here healthy and happy and moving forward and alive and well. And I know that our listeners are going to really get something out of your story. So I'd like to start from the beginning. Let's talk about how you met your husband in high school. Let's talk about that a little bit. And how you said he inserted himself into a group of your friends and courted you.
Yeah. So I actually went to a very large Catholic prep school. There were probably 800 students just in our class. Not the whole school, just the class. So it wasn't really easy to meet a group of people. So he started hanging out with us and tried to insert himself as being a friend. And I was very charmed by him and fell in love. I was inexperienced. I thought, this is it. What did I know? I was 16. Anybody could tell me that that wasn't it. And I would have said, no, of course it is. This is true love. This is great. We got married quite young. We got married at 20. That wasn't unusual coming from a Latin family. but it was certainly not expected. But I promised, and I was driven from a very young age. So I actually finished my college degree by the time we got married. I had graduated from high school with a lot of AP credits, and I went to Pace University. So we had a lot of interim little semesters. So winter break, you could take a course. There was two spring breaks, one summer break. It was quite possible to finish. So I did. I finished with my 4-year degree in 2 years and got married and bought a house.
That certainly was a woman already who pushed for more. You finished 4 years of college in 2 years, mm-hmm. husband and house. There you are. Okay. Yeah. So let's continue the story.
So things were moving along as they do with married couples, and they were in our relationship. There were always highs and lows, things that I might have ignored, jealousy for one.
Explain that a little bit. Things you might have ignored. What kind of jealousy, what kind of situations would you now not pass over?
I would describe them as jealous fits, whether it was talking to somebody else or not knowing where I was. At the time, it was explained to me by him as my fault, or it was specifically related to something that I did.
Okay, so what you're saying is if you were talking to someone else, preferably another guy, I guess, if you were talking to another guy quite innocently, or you were in a situation where you were supposed to be someplace and you were someplace else, what would your ex-husband reaction be? What would a jealous fit look like?
It would start with not talking to you at all, which causes you as a person getting the cold shoulder to say what's wrong, and them to feel like they're trying to protect you, so to speak, from their rage, but they're not. They're just drawing you in. And then it would turn into a tirade of how my action may have hurt his feelings, and about the jealousy and how clearly I knew what I was doing. And therefore, I did it on purpose. And then that would turn into, it would end with a total, I used to call it rank out, but basically a tirade of insults that are meant to bring you down a notch.
I see. So you were supposed to know exactly what you were doing, and you were actually trying to deliberately make him jealous. And this is the point of view that he would come from. He would berate you for it and tell you that it was all your fault, that you were doing this deliberately, and you were doing this deliberately to hurt him. And how could you do this to him? So rather an egotistical, rather a narcissistic viewpoint.
Exactly. Totally narcissistic. And then the last clincher to the argument was always how he had been disrespected.
So this began to take hold. And you mentioned that this kind of began to take hold even in high school.
Yes,
right.
Absolutely.
And you had mentioned to me before that what happens here, and maybe some of you out there that are first seeing the signs, even those of you who are in high school and experiencing your first love and maybe just starting to date, understanding some of the signs of what you are saying, that when you find somebody that you care about, they should not take you away from everything else that you care about. Your relationship should not be isolating you from everything else that you care about.
A relationship is supposed to bring out the best in you, not take you away from your interests, your friends, your family, your goals. It is supposed to help you bloom, not cut you off. And this relationship, and it's interesting, after the separation, I went to a high school reunion, and one of my dear friends went with me from way back in high school. And she said, I hate to tell you this now, but I saw this already way back then. I saw this when you were 17 in the cafeteria arguing how he would treat you. I saw what was going on. So it was obvious to everybody but me, and I probably wouldn't have wanted to hear it anyway.
I understand. And that's the big thing. We don't want to hear it at the time. But do you think that your friend should have persisted and told you anyway? This is important for these young women out there. Should your friends have persisted and told you?
I think my friends should have said, let me hold up a mirror for you let me just show you the changes we've seen, and we miss you. We want to spend time with you. You, not you together, but you. We don't want to lose you. Those are important things. It's very difficult when you're in this type of relationship to hear critique and to be told that what you're feeling about that person isn't either real or isn't healthy. But it's okay to say, we miss you. We long for the times that we used to hang out together. How can we still spend time together? Because that's the only way that you're not going to lose touch with that person, even as a family member. Coming down and attacking is never going to resolve it. It's just not. You're going to just dig in your heels and stay in longer.
And that's a really important point. And I think for all of our young people out there, especially for the parents of children out there, especially young women that can begin to watch their daughters dating and have them take a look and see the kind of people that they're surrounding themselves with, the kind of people that they are dating. Are you completely losing yourself in that other person? Okay. And if you are, what you're saying is the way to be receptive to hearing some things rather than shutting everybody else further is to understand their appeal to spend more time with you.
Absolutely.
So those were your early signs, and now you're in early matrimony and you're beginning to see more and more signs of control. Yes.
Yes.
And you're beginning to see more and more signs of self-centeredness on the part of your ex-husband. How is this beginning to escalate?
Well, interestingly, his family relationships started to take a hit.
What does that mean?
He just didn't have good ones. They were very explosive. 1 week they were great. 1 month later they were not. With his siblings, with his parents, with his grandfather, they just weren't solid relationships. There wasn't that give and take that you have in a family where you have this unconditional love for each other because they brought you into this world or because you shared the same house growing up. How can you not talk to each other? There wasn't that. It was based on whether or not they were respecting him or at the time. That's what it was about.
I see. So it was all about respect and all about, if you don't respect me, then you don't love me. Right?
Exactly.
I understand. Okay. So did you see any other changes in behavior? Did he start getting into anything compulsively? What else was going on?
He had always been drinking. I thought he would grow out of it. I thought that it's just a social thing. It started to become more noticeable to me, the amounts of drinking. I started to drink more. It just became part of the fabric of a weekend. And then after a weekend, it was maybe during the week on occasions. And then after during the week, as life progressed, it was pretty much all the time. And it was explained that perhaps his tolerance level was higher than other people. Or it was explained that if he didn't, I think one explanation I got was, I've recently learned I have ADHD and I have anxiety and it helps me and I need it because I need to handle life. There were a lot of explanations. He used to use these very large tumblers, the kind that you put a giant iced tea in when you go to the beach. And I used to be told that, no, that's just ice in there. It's mostly ice. There's nothing in there. I used to watch the bottles come in and go out before the week was done. It was just something I kept seeing increase and increase and increase. And if I brought it up, it was denial, denial, denial. At some points, when he was interested in being better or taking a step forward, he would actually stop for 6 months. He would say, but I don't feel good right now. I don't feel good. And I would say, yeah, it's called withdrawal. That's what that is. And he would deny it. Then he accepted that it was. I think the longest he ever went without drinking was probably, there was one time it was a year. And then it just went back.
So during that time, I mean, certainly what you're saying to me and what you're describing to me is something that we have heard before. And certainly my career as an empowerment coach and as a recovery coach, I have been around women who have suffered from trauma in the form of domestic violence from active addicts or alcoholic husbands or partners. So what you're saying to me isn't new, but I'm amazed that your husband was able to string some sobriety together and then eventually fall back, you know, without any help whatsoever. Some people do it on their own and they get some help around it or for a short time, or they white knuckle it and say, I'm not going to drink. But then of course, if they don't work on the rest of their lives and they don't work on their anxiety or their anger, all of this comes back.
Exactly.
We'll be right back. Are you ready to transform and empower your life by changing the way you think, feel, and act? Then it's time to schedule a coaching call appointment with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified empowerment coach and recovery coach. My style of coaching is part cheerleader and part drill sergeant, always in your corner and at the same time giving you the push you need to truly move forward and exactly what you need to take command of your life. If you are ready for the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, I am ready for you. Visit my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says one-on-one coaching. Make an appointment today. Welcome back, Transformation Talk Radio listeners. I'm Ellen Stewart. I am the Pushy Broad from the Bronx. Thanks for listening to my new show, Women Who Push for More. This show is called A Conversation with Patty D'Agostino. Patty was married for 30 years, and she is telling us about her experience with domestic violence within that marriage and her strength and courage to move past it. Please listen carefully. Let's continue the story. So then the abuse went from verbal abuse, which is where it usually starts, right? The belittling and the put downs and the constant bickering and agitation, and then escalating maybe to some fights and to some yelling. When did it go from a verbally abusive situation to a physically abusive situation?
Well, it wasn't until I left that I came to terms with the physical incidents that had happened in years past. I have a very faint memory of being in my bedroom when I was 16 or 17 and looking in a mirror and trying to mask bruises. I can't tell you what the argument was, what happened. I've clearly blocked it all out, but I have a faint memory of doing that, and it was bruises on my neckline area.
Wait a minute. You're telling me at 16 or 17, when you first started to see this young man, way before he was abusing alcohol, way before all of that situation, you have a vague memory of covering bruises with probably makeup or foundation,
yes,
or something like that. Okay, so then what happens, and then what we see that maybe alcohol wasn't the direct cause, but certainly exacerbated the situation for you.
It did. I think the best way to explain the interaction with alcohol and the increase and in intensity of the domestic abuse is that basically he couldn't keep it together. I think the tendency was always there. The ease at which he would berate was always there. His insecurity was always there. And his reaction was always outward, not inward to try and fix himself, but more outward.
I see. It was everybody else's fault. All right, so yes. Let's go back to some of that physical abuse. I'd like you to describe for us some of the instances and what he did.
Yeah, there are some really interesting things. Really, they weren't planned out. They were reactionary. So I recall one time getting a Brita pitcher whacked on my head when I was asleep because he was angry about something. And waking up and having to go to the hospital and get 3 stitches in my hairline. I recall being angry at the dinner table, standing up and punching the ceiling and making a hole in it.
And that's what he would be doing.
Exactly.
Out of the blue.
He would get angry at the table for whatever reason. He just disagreed, or maybe we were having, who knows, it could have been a political discussion. It could have been a discussion about the kids. It really didn't need to be much, but it always ended up being dramatic. And so he needed to, I suppose, I mean, only he could probably explain it, but I suppose it's he needed to show he had control. He needed to make a point. And that's how he would make the point, with a physical action. So a hole in the ceiling, throwing something. It ended towards the end. The reason that it got this bad was probably because I stopped placating. There were times the last few years of the marriage where we would have an argument and I couldn't get him to stop anymore. Arguments always started at the dinner table with kids around. I couldn't get him to start anymore, so So I would leave and I'd say, excuse me, I'm done. And I would go up in the bedroom and I could hear him screaming. He would keep the kids there, just screaming, 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 and talking about me, constantly complaining about me. There were things, I would lock myself in the bedroom. He would take the door off the hinges. I would try and leave, take the car keys and just drive away. He would stand behind the car so you can't get out. There was a lot of control and trauma and playing around with somebody else's brain.
So there was a lot of mind manipulation. I'm sure a lot of gaslighting. It's not that bad. It's not me. It's you. You're crazy. I'm sure I've heard that many, many times. I don't have a drinking problem, or you're stupid. You're crazy. I'm fine. Right.
All you don't know what you're doing. You're out of control. You really need to get it together. It must be menopause. It must be cancer. It must be this. It must be that. It's anything but him.
And here's the thing that I know our listeners are going to step back on. How long were you with this man?
30 years married, and prior to that, 4 years dating. It's 34 years.
So everybody out in Transformation Talk Radio Land is asking the same question. You saw the signs. You saw them from when you were 16 years old, standing in front of that mirror, having a flashback and looking at your bruises. You continue to see the signs. Why did you wait so long? Explain to us what made you stay.
Yeah, there's a few reasons. One is quitting would be failing. I didn't want to fail. Quitting, you know, giving up on the marriage, giving up on the relationship would have been failing, and I certainly didn't want to do that. I loved him. I fell in love with him. So if he said he was sorry, which abusers are very good at saying they're sorry, I would believe him. And I felt I didn't have a good enough reason not to believe him. Then things got more complicated because I had children. So how was I going to leave when I have children? And also, I was in the middle of all of this. I didn't recognize these as signs. I know they're signs now. I know what a healthy relationship is now. But going into that relationship at the age of 16, I didn't have a point of comparison. I didn't know that wasn't healthy. I didn't know what healthy should look like. I thought that was love. And you know, after 30 years of marriage and everything I went through, I look back at that period. I don't think he ever did love me. I think I made him feel better about himself. That's all that was.
Okay. Sometimes we find that in these kinds of cases, people that need help because of how they treat other people, whether it's a man who is being violent against a woman or vice versa, it's because of how they were raised. Many times it becomes a family situation, what they got from their family. Sometimes that situation is passed down from generation. Mm-hmm. That's one possible explanation. The other possible explanation is something certainly in his in his past. It could be the alcoholism exacerbated things. It could also be that he did love you, but he just did not know how to manage that. And he did not know how to manage his own insecurities. And his own insecurities made him feel as if everybody had to be there for him. He needed that so much. His coach needed that so much. And and of course, people are filled with anger because they are so insecure. So there are many, 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 many reasons. But I'm not necessarily, I never necessarily think it's because they didn't care about you. It's because they didn't know how to cope with caring at all on any level that makes it a part.
Yeah. And you know what, there's probably some truth to that. And there's also the fact that at the very basic level, he didn't really know how to care about himself enough to care about his health or his state of mind.
Right. I think you're right. Okay. So here we are 30 years later. I understand all of the reasons, and we're going to talk a little bit more about those reasons. But what I want to know is, there obviously was a last straw. So I want to know, when I have been through two divorces, and for me personally, when I was ready to leave, it didn't just happen one day. I didn't just turn around and say, okay, today's the day I'm going to leave. It became a plan in my head for a little while. All right. It became a plan because I had to work it out. I had to think about where I was going to go. And of course, it was not based on domestic violence or any of those things. It just was the breakdown of a marriage. It was just the end. But I still made a plan, you know, weeks or months or sometimes, you know, a year before I was ready to go. What happened with you specifically? Did you turn around one day after an episode and say, I'm out of here? Or were you planning this for a while? Walk us through the end.
I think the end, I mean, I always probably back in 2008, I had cancer. And, you know, when you struggle with that, you sort of try to appreciate your life. I don't think I had appreciated my life for a long time before that. And so I didn't want the same things to continue happening. So I tried once again, but it got more verbal, more crazy, just more out of control anyway. And so I knew in my head, I had decided, I'm going to stick this out until maybe the last kid graduates from high school. And that's it, because I don't think I can deal anymore. And I would tell myself that during arguments so I could get through them. I wrote myself little notes and hid them so that I could go back and look at them, but I wasn't really physically planning anything. I wasn't putting away money. I wasn't doing anything of that sort, mostly for fear. I didn't even know how I was going to be able to do any of that. But the arguing got so bad that I hit rock bottom. Rock bottom for me was, it was such a traumatic argument that I went to a friend's house and I stayed with her, and I was being harassed and haunted by him constantly. And I was suicidal. I had suicidal thoughts. I couldn't sleep any longer. My phone was constantly ringing. There were constant voicemails, constant threats, constant texting, constant voice recording coming through texting. It was making me unravel, and I couldn't handle it. I had been in the car. I picked out the tree I was going to slam this car into. I was going for it. And the phone rang on the day that I picked it out as I'm driving past the tree. And it was one of my kids. And it was a regular, hey, mom, how are you? And it just shook me up. And I went back to my friend's house and I said, okay, you're right. I help me find a place, you know, help me find a place where I can go away for a while and get my head straight, because somebody has to take this person out of me, because I'm literally dying. So we found a place. We got it approved with the insurance company. I had to go back to the house to pick up some things. At that point, I communicated that to him. And when I got there, I was physically assaulted. And I was told that I was going to be chopped up into pieces.
Did you go by yourself?
I did.
Tell me again what he said to you one more time.
That I would be chopped up into pieces and buried in the woods. And so I sat there in shock. And then I just, I don't know from where, just got up and headed for the nearest door and started screaming. And he then allowed me, he was in shock about it, then allowed me to take my stuff. And then I just got in the car and called my friend and ran. They only allow you to spend something like 5 days in a psychiatric hospital, really.
You went to calm down in a psychiatric hospital.
Yeah.
Because you were having a nervous breakdown or something that you felt was close to that.
I was suicidal. I felt the only way out of this, the only way this pain was going to end is if I ended. That was it.
This pain was going to end is if you ended your life.
Yes, that was it.
And that certainly is the depths of despair, isn't it?
It is. It was bottom.
Where is the sun? How did it turn around? You said it turned around from having one of your children
call. And that's how I got myself into the hospital, because I realized I'm not going to do this. I can't do this. I can't do this. It's not me, but I have to literally go somewhere where they can extricate him from my head. So I went and I stayed for 5 days. I think it was 5 days. And then I was supposed to leave. Then they do a family thing when you're about to leave. I learned a lot of things while I was there. I learned a lot of DBT therapy. While doing DBT, I realized that it wasn't me at all. And that I was fine. There was nothing wrong with me. And that it was him. He was actually not allowed to even come to the hospital, because when he found out where I was, he was harassing them. Somehow then he ended up, you know, leaving domestic abuse is a cycle as well. The national statistic is it takes 7 attempts to leave.
I'm sorry, so, back that up again. I'm not sure we understand. What do you mean, leaving?
It takes a victim of abuse 7 tries
to actually
before they successfully leave. That's the average amount. So that was my first try. And for a lot of crazy reasons, I ended up back at home with him.
How many years were you married at that time?
29. Ended up back at home with him. And then the next month ensued, I believe it was about a month, where we went through a lot of things, including a CPS investigation, which is Child Protective Services. Child Protective Services got involved because I was accused of being a bad mom.
I've seen that many times. So I'll turn the tables on you and tell you that it's all your fault. You're the one that needs help. You're the one that is the bad mother. You're the one that's the bad wife. Right. I mean, I've seen the person who is involved in domestic abuse, the abuser, actually take out an order of protection on
the person that he is victimizing, claiming that now he is the victim of abuse.
They do it. So Child Protective Services got involved right before I left the hospital. I was actually immediately cleared within 24 hours of that investigation. Child Protective Services, though, stayed involved to monitor, because they had communications with my doctors and therapists at the hospital and got wind of what was going on. And this particular agent for Child Protective Services had a clinical background. And so he wasn't your average person. So he wanted to stay involved. And he did. So he conducted the 60 days investigation. But I was cleared, and really what was being investigated was him. it turned into, eventually, he was indicated. Not that it makes a difference, but it was somebody else believing me. So psychologically, it helped. But in the interim point where I came back, everything really got a lot worse in that 1 month period. We tried couples therapy. That's a farce. Never do that. We tried that.
Well, I mean, it does work for a lot of people, but when you're in a situation where you have someone that is mentally and physically abusing you, unless they are getting their own help on their own and even realize that this is a problem, couples therapy may not be the initial answer for you.
Right.
It, it doesn't, this particular situation.
It doesn't work if the balance of power and control is off. It just doesn't. And so that therapist also took notice, and that therapist also pointed it out to him and to me. Things sort of just devolved and kept getting worse and worse during that 1 month period. The last thing that it ended with was a physical assault that started on, let's see, March 31st and ended April 1st. On March 31st, 2016. On March 31st, I was, we got into an argument. It was financial. It ended with physically being assaulted and told to leave the house the next day. And I said, no, yeah, I'll do that. I thought, this is my way out. I've just let him know that he won. This is great. This is my way out. I don't know where I'm going, but I'll just pack a bag tomorrow and go. First thing I did in the morning after getting ready is just pack the bag. I had a little bag ready and I went to go take it. And then I was told that no, I needed to do some paperwork because this financial issue is, you know, I needed to handle the applications and do whatever had to be done. Okay. All right. So I did that. Then I was just about done. What I saw was a 1.75 liter of Dewars start from being full at 8 o'clock in the morning. And by 11 o'clock in the morning was halfway gone. And my luggage was locked in a room and I couldn't access my car keys or my wallet or anything. And I started to realize that things were quickly escalating and this may not go well. I was in our office, which had a sliding glass door in the back of the desk area. So it had two entry points, the interior one and the exterior one. Things got heated and he got really angry and upset that he wasn't understanding what I was saying with regard to the financial paperwork I just prepared for him. And I started to be told a story of an altercation from his past and told that that's what happened to that person when they disrespected me.
What is that?
He got into a physical brawl with the person. And he said, that's what happens when people disrespect me. So he was essentially threatening me. So I went out the sliding back door. I just got up, unlocked it, and slid out as quick as I could. He was on the other side of the desk. And we got into a physical altercation outside because he was trying to drag me back inside. And I held on to a fence for dear life. And I screamed and I was put into a chokehold and I actually bit him so he would let go. And then I was thrown to the ground and I screamed and yelled and flailed. Literally, I knew I couldn't overpower him, but I knew that if I moved around enough and made enough noise, that was my only chance. So I did that until he got frightened that somebody would hear and he went inside. And then I walked. So I had nothing on me and I just walked 3 miles to the nearest phone.
Wow. And that was on April 1st of 2016.
Right. And I say it all the time, but it's pretty ironic. It's April Fool's Day.
Yes. Well, it's the day you stopped being a fool, so to speak.
So to speak.
Your eyes were really opened.
Exactly.
You are not going to be a fool any longer. So that began your first day of freedom.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. Are you ready to transform and empower your life by changing the way you think, feel, and act? Then it's time to schedule a coaching call appointment with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified empowerment coach and recovery coach. My style of coaching is part cheerleader and part drill sergeant, always in your corner and at the same time giving you the push you need to truly move forward and exactly what you need to take command of your life. If you are ready for the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, I am ready for you. Visit my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says one-on-one coaching. Make an appointment today. Welcome back. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, and we are talking to Patty D'Agostino. This is my program, Women Who Push for More. Patty has just told us that on April 1st, 2016, she left a 30-year marriage after coping with domestic abuse and domestic violence. She walked to freedom on April 1st, 2016. It's been 4 years later. We're going to talk to Patty about how her life has completely turned around and the kind of work that she does today. So let's talk about since that time. It's been 4 years, and there's just a couple of things that I want to touch on for that moment. But I want you to talk about some of your work now and where your children are in this and how supportive they are of you now. And let's talk about what's happened since then and the kind of work that you're doing to help other women who are victims of domestic violence. So let's talk about that a little bit.
So one of the things that I wanted to do was gain as many skills as I possibly could to help people going forward, because I realized how difficult it is to get out of this situation. So I took a divorce mediation course so I could understand the law better and really have thoughtful conversations with people. I took a crisis counseling course from the Department of Health so I could understand, you know, how to de-escalate the conversation and have a person be present, because when you're dealing with trauma, it's very difficult to have a conversation that you're even going to remember. So I took that course as well. And then I joined an organization that was a very small organization in Northeast Westchester that was about creating awareness about domestic violence. And it was uniting people as a front. Northeast Westchester happens to be geographically very distant from where all the agencies in the court system is. All agencies and court systems are at White Plains and South. And
we're talking about New York.
New York. Yes, we're talking about New York. So in this one county, White Plains from Northeast Westchester, if you happen to live there, is easily 45 minutes away. If you need to go to court for an order of protection, it's 45 minutes to get there. Not to mention the time to get the paperwork written, sit down with an attorney if you're lucky enough to afford one or get one, or even receive counseling for domestic violence. It's all far away. And so it's unfortunate that that was the case. And rather than reinvent the wheel and start a new agency and figure that out, we realized that there are plenty of agencies that do the work well, but they're down county. What if we created a space where they could access the client, it would be closer to home, they could access the service, and they would be in their own environment, and it wouldn't be as far. So we created New Dawn Family Resource Center, and we co-founded this organization to be essentially a space. Five towns collaborated on it, and they're the five towns that are in that Northeast Westchester County pocket. We also received a grant for what's called risk reduction. So we were the host place for risk reduction. And what risk reduction does is it focuses around a questionnaire from Jackie Campbell, who was an RN nurse that did some research regarding it. And it's a series of questions that have been statistically proven that if you answer these questions and then you rate it the way that they're showing you how to do it, it can tell you whether this particular victim is at a high risk for lethality or not. And if you answer the top three questions, yes, it's an automatic high risk for lethality. And so it's just a tool that not only counselors, but police can use in order to identify who's at highest risk and what needs to be done. And so they used it as a test pilot in that Northeast Westchester area, and we hosted all the trainings and meetings, et cetera, surrounding that there. It was such a success in Northeast Westchester that now it's going countywide, which is wonderful. And it's also an important tool for police because it can understand what they're walking into if they can do this one questionnaire, which is really very simple. It's 10 questions.
Is this questionnaire available for publication for anybody that wants to tap into it?
You can look it up, the Jackie Campbell Risk Assessment, but you need to be trained in order to use it. I'm sure somebody has it up there on a PDF, but you do have to undergo training in order for you to understand how to ask the questions and use it properly. But it's in a very important tool for all communities and police departments to be using at this stage.
So the foundation that you're currently a part of, when was its inception? 2016, 2017?
It actually was started in late 2017, but was incorporated in 2018.
And tell me about it, some of its success.
Well, some of its success is this particular, bringing to light this particular program and hosting it, and now that it's moving on. The other successes that it's had is to actually be the space there for victims of abuse so that they don't have to leave their area, their location. It's located within the Five Towns area, but it is far closer for you to go there than it is for you to drive 40 minutes to White Plains or 50 minutes and sit there and hopefully see somebody. We allow agencies that provide counseling and legal services to come and use the space to meet with clients. And it's a confidential location. We don't advertise where we are. It's very secure, and most importantly, it's extremely accessible.
And most importantly, you have been able to overcome 30 years worth of trauma and give back in an extremely hopeful and helpful way. So we applaud you for that. And
thank you.
And everybody will see on YouTube that we're putting the name of the organization so that you can go and see what it's all about and make donations, which New Dawn always accepts, which is great. All right, so moving on, tell us a little bit about how you're doing now and how your relationship is with your children.
Well, it's good and it's not good. You know, being in a relationship that's abusive for 30 some odd years, extricating yourself from it is not going to be simple. I'm not going to lie to anybody. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of support system. It takes a lot of therapy and a lot of working on yourself to move forward. But after doing that and being dedicated to it, my personal life in terms of career is great. It's very fulfilling. I'm actually in a healthy relationship, so that's fabulous.
Fantastic.
I actually can appreciate and know what it is, so that's wonderful. Back to the children, unfortunately, abuse tends to have repercussions on everybody. And it's taken me a long time to put the blame where it belongs and learn to be open to possibilities and accept the change. There's one thing that came out of this that I wholeheartedly believe is that nothing ever stays the same forever. Nothing. It took 30 years to change this. Right now, I have, of my two kids, essentially, I have 50% of a relationship. Because I have a relationship with one child. The other child still aligns themselves with him, which is understandable given the years and given the tenacity of behaving as a victim all his life. So I understand it. I should be the one to understand it because it took me 30 years to get out of it. So how can I have any ill will towards my own child because of it? The door is always open and the heart is always open. But recently, I probably in the last 6 months, after a lot of hard work, came to terms with the fact that I need to just move forward from that and not keep holding this little candle that I'm trying to pretend it's not going to go out, and that the flame, I have to keep it going no matter what. I have to let this child do what this child feels they need to do. And that's my way of showing just how much I love them.
And like you said, the one constant we have in this world is change.
Yep.
And we understand that no matter what, change is good, because we do evolve. So as I said to you, as I had said to you before we aired, as long as you're alive, there's hope. There's hope that people can change for the better. You were able to move away from something that was extremely toxic after 30 years. Your children will find their way, especially since there are so many more resources available today. And the whole idea of getting help and therapy and learning self-development tools does not carry the stigma that it used to. So that over time, rest assured, they will find a way to heal. And you can think about a rekindling of relationships.
I believe so. I really do. And I've been able to really be supportive of the one that I do have a relationship with, so that they can move away from the experiences that they had and have become a very, very healthy human that is very giving and accomplished on their own and is so understanding and so far from what that toxicity was, that there's hope for everybody, really.
I understand. So tell us, just give us an idea of what kind of powerful message you want to leave with us today as the pushy broad from Queens and now the pushy broad from Westchester, because you certainly are, you know, you certainly are now a woman that is powerful and unafraid and certainly self-aware, hardworking and young at heart for sure, because your life has kind of reinvented itself and started all over again. With love, right? Love in the air and everything else working out. So what kind of message do you want to leave with us today as a pushy broad from Westchester?
Don't close doors on yourself. There is always hope. There's always a light inside of you. And as I tell my own child, there's plenty of people that out there that aren't helpful. You don't need to be the first one in line when it comes to you. Love yourself. And give yourself every opportunity that you would your own child. And this is a really hard and difficult thing to accept, whether it's an abusive situation or whether you're just oppressed in some way. But if you love yourself, you are going to help yourself and nurture that part and allow it to bloom.
So if you had to do it over again, knowing what you know now, would you have waited 30 years to get here?
Nope. That's okay.
But at least you got here now.
And you know what? Who knows what leaving then would have looked like? Who knows what it would be like? We can't live in the what ifs. We can only live in the present. And here and now is where we're at. This is when I made my choice. I'm happy I did. I have no regrets in making it. It's all good.
Penny, we all appreciate your honesty and your courage in sharing your story with us today. We all felt your pain and your hope most of all. Congratulations and good luck. Thank you for joining me on Women Who Push for More.
Thank you for having me.
If you are in immediate danger, call 911. For anonymous, confidential help 24/7, call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. All calls are completely confidential. Get help today. As long as you are alive, there's hope. This is Ellen Stewart, the pushy broad from the Bronx, saying thanks for listening. And remember, everybody needs a little push.
From the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York.